thank you to the founding sponsor of Undivided, my friends at 1530 Mortgage. Visit them at 1530mortgage.com. Today, how the media uses race to divide us, and why their obsession with race conveniently leaves out certain narratives. Plus, a big announcement that I'm going to share first with Undivided listeners. Happy Friday. Welcome to the Undivided podcast. A lot of exciting things going on right now. I have some news that I'm going to share first with loyal Undivided podcast listeners. It's big news, kind of life-changing news, and I'm very excited. I started the Undivided podcast because I really, truly believe in this mission of giving common sense a comeback, this mission of giving a voice to Americans in the middle of the fringes who feel drowned out by louder voices. And I've thought a lot the last few months about the best way for me to try to make a difference in that regard. And I would be lying if I said that politics and running for political office has not been something that's been on my mind for some time now. You know, it's one thing to kind of talk about the state of politics and to demand that elected leaders do better. It's another thing to take the leap and try to fix the system in a different way. So I will get right to it. Today, I am launching my 2024 independent campaign for the governor of Washington State. I can't believe those words are coming out of my mouth. I know you're thinking this is very early, but there's a hard truth out there, and that is that running outside the two-party system requires a lot of groundwork, it requires a lot of money, and so it's going to require a non-traditional campaign. And this feels like the right time, it feels like the right moment, and it also feels a lot like April Fool's Day. Sorry, I had to. I feel like that was very convincing, though. So mine is just fun and games, but I saw some horrendous ones this morning. There was this, so I could not sleep last night. And so I was on Twitter, as I usually do when I can't sleep, which is a terrible way to try to get back to sleep. But I saw this article from Mediaite. If you're not familiar, they do kind of politics and coverage of the press and everything adjacent to that. There was this tweet, and at first I knew it was April Fool's Day, but I don't know, when I saw this, it just seemed like a stupid April Fool's Day story, so I was so confused. The headline was, it had a picture of Jen Psaki, the White House press secretary, and the headline was, quote, "Her bloodlust is unquenchable." And then it says, "White House increasingly concerned about Jen Psaki's murderous tendencies." It's got like this creepy black and white photo of her. I was like, what the hell? So I clicked on it, and I obviously knew it was an April Fool's Day story, but I was like, that's really dark. That's not even funny. That's just dark. And it had these like graphic depictions of like her murdering a White House intern and placing his severed head on her lectern, her choking to death an ambassador with a piano wire something. It was really, really strange. Like her curb stomping someone to death. And I was like, what is this? I don't know if people have just gotten too carried away with these April Fool's Day things, but they're supposed to be funny. Like that was just weird and dark. And anyway, I tweeted about it and immediately Mediaite in the middle of the night decided to delete any trace of this article. And at the time it hadn't really been shared a lot. So I don't know if it's going to be a controversy or whatever, but I mean, it's just a stupid April Fool's Day joke gone wrong. It was just weird. Anyway, so no, I'm not announcing a 2024 bid for governor, but I had you fooled. Maybe. Who knows? Maybe you're wise to the April Fool's Day stuff. Anyway, okay, an important conversation about the media, about how the media uses race to divide us coming up. But first, I want to talk a little bit about the founding sponsor of Undivided 1530 Mortgage, and especially right now because they do home refinancing as well as new home loans. And I know that things are tough. Gas prices are insane, inflation, it all results in folks, some folks having to put, for instance, more money on their credit cards. But one of the things, especially around here, is the fact that home prices have gone up really dramatically in recent years. And so a lot of folks are sitting on the equity in their home. And now might be a good time to do a cash out refi. If you're interested in discussing that, kind of going over the options, call my friends at 1530 Mortgage. If they don't think it's right for you, they'll tell you. But if they think that you could benefit from it at this moment and maybe help weather some of the current economic challenges that we're having, they'll help you do it. So give them a call, 206-207-7777. Tell them you heard about them on the Undivided podcast. Or you can visit their website and see all the current rates at 1530mortgage.com. That's 1530mortgage.com. 1530 Mortgage, NMLS number 1761573, Equal Housing Opportunity. Anyway, a lot to talk about today, a lot to talk about on the show this weekend. It's just been a busy week. And I got a lot of requests from you guys to cover this quote unquote, don't say gay bill in Florida. Folks saying that they don't really understand what it is because the media coverage of it has been so disparate depending on what media outlet you watch. So I'm not going to talk about that on the podcast today because I want to talk about it on the Sunday Undivided digital show, which you can watch on my Patreon page, patreon.com/undivided, or on my locals community, brandycruz.locals.com. But my analysis of the media coverage of that is going to be a little bit, it's going to have some shadows of this other story that I want to discuss today around media coverage of the issue of race. I know the Don't Say Gay bill in Florida has nothing to do with race, but it involves some similar, I think, media tendencies. I mean, the overall media tendency, of course, which is to vilify anything that comes from Republicans and to sugarcoat anything that comes from the left. I mean, I'm not saying all reporters are like that, but it's definitely a theme. So anyway, my friend Jason Rantz over on KTDH, he hosts the Jason Rantz Show on KTDH Radio in Seattle, also a frequent Fox News contributor. And look, Jason and I don't agree on everything. He's a dear friend of mine, but we don't agree on everything politically, clearly. But he always digs up these really good stories that the mainstream media refuses, just flat out, to cover. And I'm boggled by this. And Jason's going to be on the Sunday Digital Show as well, talking about this in another story. So Jason has this exclusive report. You can read it at mynorthwest.com. The headline, King County banned white staff from workshop and tried to cover it up. This is a story that could only be true in Seattle. So a King County government agency, so King County is the county seat of Seattle, in case you're not familiar, they hosted this seminar, a remote seminar, and it was titled Anti-Blackness and Diet Culture. And the person who was going to be hosting this seminar, someone named Liberating Jasper, has argued that, quote, Western ideals of attractiveness and health are steeped in whiteness. So the essential basics of the seminar is that dieting as we know it in America is based in racism. And if people want to believe that, if they want to believe that standards of beauty are about the attractiveness of white people and everyone's held to that standard, I'm not really going to argue about their beliefs on that issue. What I am going to argue about is the fact that this seminar was reserved for BIPOC employees only. So it explicitly was for employees of color. White employees were not supposed to attend, which according to Rantz, and he did like a month of work on this and public disclosure requests, because he said that he had started poking around about this and the county got real sketchy. And so he put in some public disclosure requests about the workshop on February 17th. And what he found out is that a white employee ended up joining this remote workshop, was immediately kicked out of the Zoom room or whatever and banned from re-entering. Now, when Jason asked the county about this, they denied that that was the case, basically said, oh, no, that white employee was kicked out by accident. And then Jason was able to reveal through emails that that was not the case. Just to show you the level of kind of deceit here, a spokesperson for the King County Executive said, the vendor had technical issues on their end with the session, which impacted several people that got bumped out and then weren't able to rejoin. Now, Jason kind of knew that was bullshit. Because this email he'd obtained, so the white county employee who joined, my understanding was a King County Sheriff's Office employee. When that employee was kicked out, they sent an email to the interim sheriff expressing their frustration. The email read, during the first few minutes, I had my front-facing camera turned off and was enjoying the training. But they go on to say, I turned my front-facing camera on and was promptly removed from the training. And they point out that they said nothing when they turned their camera on. The microphone was on mute. They were simply taking in the meeting. And when they tried to, when they got kicked off, tried to rejoin, they were blocked from doing so. And so again, this white employee had been taking in the meeting for several minutes, no problems at all with their camera off. But once their camera went on and it was revealed that they were white, they were kicked out of the meeting. So anyway, the sheriff, who's black, took action on this, sent this complaint forward, and that's what kind of resulted in some of this happening. So good for the sheriff for sticking up for her employee. And I've heard great things about the sheriff, by the way. So anyway, again, the county executive staff says, oh, no, it was a technical error. And the people putting on the event said the same thing, said, quote, I'm so sorry you had this experience. We were navigating some technology issues today and weren't fully able to come back online. So Jason proved that that was a blatant lie. The county executive's office ended up doing an investigation about this. And they later followed up with Jason Rantz and said, you know what? It turns out that we were lied to. Chase Gallagher, who is a spokesperson for the King County Executive, who I know very well. Chase is a great guy. I don't think he would lie on purpose to Jason. I think he was given a lie and forwarded it on to Jason. So he followed up with Jason and said, following your inquiry and subsequent information received by staff, an investigation occurred to gather all the facts and full understanding of the events that took place. He went on to say, the investigation found, in fact, there was a deliberate decision by one of the employees involved in the session to remove an individual from the event. The information provided by that employee led to the response that was relayed to you, which we now know was not accurate. Gallagher went on to say that the employee resigned as a result. So good for the King County Executive's Office for following up with Jason. I don't know how much prodding that all of that included, but they're saying, hey, we were lied to. And based on my knowledge of Chase Gallagher in covering politics and him being a spokesperson for multiple politicians, I don't doubt that Chase didn't lie to Jason intentionally. So here you have a situation where a government entity has a meeting specifically for one race of people and to exclude another race of people. Now, given the media's outright obsession with everything race, it would seem that this would be something that would be obvious to cover, but the mainstream media didn't touch it. Jason talked about it. My friend Dori Monson, another conservative radio host, talked about it. And so now this becomes a conservative story and conservative anger and not a real problem because people just dismiss it as being something that, you know, right-wing radio is talking about. And that's ridiculous. This, by any standard of journalism, is a news story. Not only do you have the element of discriminating on the basis of race, but you have the element of a government employee lying about it blatantly to government officials, resulting in those government officials lying to the media about it. So you have the racism aspect of it and the cover-up from the government. Like I said, I'm going to reiterate, by any journalistic standard, this is a news story. You know, the other element of this is the county has defended these BIPOC-only events going back to 2021. But there is really no interest in the mainstream media about covering blatant discrimination against white people. If you had a white person-only event that excluded people of color, it would be a huge story. And there might be people that argue, oh yeah, but you know, people of color have been discriminated against. They don't want to sometimes have these conversations around white people. But you can't, as a government entity, discriminate on the basis of race. So regardless of how people of color might feel about having to be in certain meetings with white people, if it's a government meeting, you can't exclude people on the basis of race. It is that simple. And so the lack of consistency from the media on this topic, you know, if this were a whites-only meeting, I would sure hope my friend Jason Rantz would still cover it. I would sure hope my friend Dori Monson would still cover it. And obviously the rest of the media would cover it. So it comes into this issue of consistency. Again, I'm going to have Jason talk about this on the show Sunday, but then there was another story that popped up this week. There was this really terrible murder in Shoreline, which is just north of Seattle. The suspect is a black man. Victim is a white woman. I'll be honest, the details of it are pretty hard. I do want to just summarize them briefly. So maybe if you're not interested in hearing that, just turn down the volume for like 15 seconds. I'll give you a second to do that. Okay. So these two had some sort of dating relationship. He invited her over and he ended up just deciding that he was going to kill her. He attacked her with a hatchet. He beat her with bongo drums and bolt cutters. And this guy, Tyrone Wells, has been charged with premeditated first degree murder. And at the time, he also had 3 warrants out for his arrest. So an article in the Seattle Times on this report, you know, one of the most important things journalistically when you look at a murder of any kind is motive. That's what people want to know. That's what your readers and viewers want to know. That's what the victim's family wants to know. That's what prosecutors and police want to know. What was the motive? So in an article from the Seattle Times, there was a line that speaks to that. It says, the charges don't provide a motive for Rios's slaying. Rios is the name of the woman who was killed, Randy Rios, just 32 years old. So let me read that line again. The charges don't provide a motive for Rios's slaying. But prosecutors say Wells claimed to have been using meth in the days leading up to her killing. So, okay, if you're a reader of the Seattle Times and you're looking at that, you're thinking, okay, they don't have a motive, but maybe this was some meth-induced act of violence. And there's no question that, you know, a multi-day meth binge may very well have contributed to the state of mind that resulted in this. However, there is another motive that was in the court documents that, for whatever reason, the Seattle Times left out and other media outlets in Seattle failed to mention. And that is that Mr. Wells told investigators that he was reading the Quran before he carried out the homicide and that he believed that Allah wanted him to do this. This is what it says in the court documents, directly from the court documents. Wells stated that he had been reading the Quran prior to Rios's arrival and that verses in the Quran seemed to indicate to him that it would be necessary for him to kill Rios. Again, that's one of several aspects of the possible motive here. You got somebody who hasn't slept in days, high on meth, potentially mentally ill, and then in that state of mind is reading the Quran, is somehow convinced that he needs to kill this woman who he's been in a dating relationship with. And you can argue that his belief in that is a result of his mental illness, but it doesn't mean that you have to hide that information from the public. So it's odd to me that the Seattle Times article would say, quote, the charges don't provide a motive for Rios's slaying, but prosecutors say Wells claimed to have been using meth in the days leading up to her killing. That's not true. The charges provide multiple motives. And so it's very odd that the Seattle Times would not only selectively leave out certain aspects of the motive that police thought important enough to include in the court documents, but that they would actually go as far as to say the charges don't provide a motive. Now, again, that could be some meth-induced psychosis. I don't believe that reading the Quran or practicing Islam makes you a murderer, makes you a violent murderer. But journalistically, you know, what are the basics that I need to relay to my audience? The most basic thing is the motive. And for some reason, they chose to include the possible motive of meth use, but not the suspect's own statements that he believed that he was being told by Allah to commit the crime. Now, why is this important? Well, if you had some white Christian man who carried out a brutal homicide of a black person, and he told police that he was reading the Bible and realized that God wanted him to do it, do you believe for one second that that information would not be included in press reports? Of course it would. Of course it would. And so again, you get to this issue of the media deciding, usually on the basis of race, about what information they believe is pertinent to pass along to you. It's how slowly the media shapes narratives. Look at it holistically. It's not about the media reporting it and say, oh, Islam is bad. Let's demonize people who are Islamic. No, it's just about being transparent about what the court documents say and what this guy told police the motives are. He had been using meth for several days and that he was reading the Quran and thought he was doing this on behalf of Allah. That's all the public needs to know because those are the facts. And the public can take that information and make their own judgments. But it is not the job of the press to hide things from the public because they're worried about how the public might receive those things. And that's what the media is doing here. You're very intentionally including one possible motive, but not another possible motive. And again, both of those quote-unquote motives could be the result of a mental illness. I know that friends of this suspect have expressed that he did suffer from mental illness, and you can include that in your reporting as well. And then you've given the public all the information, and they can take it and they can make a determination on their own. It is not your job to hide information, to steer them in the direction of what they should think about the crime. It's so bizarre to me. So anyway, I was on with my friend Dori Monson on, we do a weekly Thursday interview, and we were discussing this, and I hadn't heard about the Caron angle, probably because I'd been looking at the news and it hadn't been mentioned. And one of the things Dori said is he was actually pleasantly surprised that King 5 News, which is the NBC affiliate in Seattle, had reported that angle. And I was kind of surprised by that too, because people tend to see them as the most left-leaning TV station in town. I think there's pretty good arguments for that. But indeed, I did a search to look at how King 5 had referenced it in the reporting. And I'm just going to take you through what happened here, because this is wild. This is wild. So I searched murder shoreline, Seattle, reading the Caron, King 5. So the very first thing that pops up, it's a King 5 article. And you can see, you know how when you do a Google search, it's got like the headline and then it's got some words from the article below it. And you can see that there was a match for reading the Caron. They said, I can see just part of the search results said, Wells reported he had been reading the Caron. And so I can see that much of it. And then today, while I'm recording this on Friday, I clicked on the article. And that mention of Wells saying he was reading the Caron has been scrubbed from the article. You can see it in the Google search result, but the actual article, it no longer exists. And the article itself says it was published about 4 p.m. on Wednesday, and then it says updated 3:30 p.m. on Thursday. And I can't help but think, Dori Monson's show had just wrapped up about that time on Thursday, and Dori had talked about on his show this lack of acknowledgement that this suspect mentioned he was reading the Caron. And he mentioned that King 5 is the only outlet that talked about that. And I can't help but wonder whether King 5 realized, oh, well, we don't want to be the only one mentioning the Caron, and went in and deleted it. So I have reached out to King 5 News to request comment as to why that reference has been scrubbed from their reporting. And when I get an answer from them, if I get an answer from them, I will pass that along to you. Again, this is an example of the media shape-shifting their coverage or shape-shifting their stories on the basis of the races that are involved in the story and how the public might perceive their reporting on the basis of race. It's not about the facts, which is the only thing that reporting should be about. And going back to the Jason Rantz article, a very legitimate news story that the mainstream media has ignored because it has to do with the exclusion of white people, not the exclusion of people of color. And there is no media outlet in the city that can argue to me that it wouldn't cover that story if the situation was reversed, if it was a whites-only meeting that was excluding black people. And I am willing to debate or discuss with anyone in the press who wants to argue to me that I'm wrong on this. Please, I mean, reach out to me, ask.undivided@gmail.com. Any of my friends in the press, if you want to argue to me that the media's handling of the Shoreline murder, that the lack of coverage of this dieting workshop from King County wasn't a news story or wasn't worthy of coverage, I will have you on the podcast. We can discuss it. I'll hear you out in good faith. But I have a really hard time with the way that the media is operating and the way that the media is manipulating stories to fit a certain narrative around race in this country. And this is something that I've noticed in stories in New York City as well. There have been a slew of violent attacks on Asians perpetrated by black suspects. Now, if these were a slew of attacks by white men perpetrated on Asian suspects, some of them explicitly hate crimes, according to investigators, that would be the theme of the story. And that's not to say that every attack there on Asian individuals has been perpetrated by black people, but there have been several high-profile ones. And you just don't see the same emphasis on the race of the suspect as you have and as you would if the suspect were white. Again, it's picking and choosing when to include race in stories as a way to shape a narrative. And it's wrong. It's not journalistic. I also shared on my Facebook page a couple days ago this tweet from King 5 Seattle. It was actually an Associated Press article, but King 5, for people who are not familiar, Associated Press will write things. It's like a wire service. So then it goes out to other entities and they'll post it on or have it on their site. So King 5 sent out a tweet of this article written by the Associated Press, and the headline of the article was Black Women Feel Sting of Traumatizing Jackson Hearings. Has to do with the Supreme Court nominee going through hearings right now in Congress. And the tweet says, Supreme Court nominee Ketanji Brown Jackson had to endure hours of public scrutiny during her Senate hearings, and that's something familiar to many Black women. Every Supreme Court justice, quote, endures hours of public scrutiny. Brett Kavanaugh did. Amy Coney Barrett did. This is something that has become pretty normal in the Supreme Court nomination process. And so when you have the media here saying, oh, she endured hours of public scrutiny and it's about her race and they did it because she was a Black woman. No. And it bothers me that the media thinks people are that dumb or that gullible. That's so odd to me. And what's important to realize is these are, by and large, white reporters who are deciding how these narratives around race are going to play out, because one of the problems in mainstream media has been a complete lack of diversity. And it's something I know that the media is working on to diversify its newsrooms. I think that's very important to have a diverse set of perspectives. But when you have this issue of the media downplaying instances of reverse racism or downplaying the actions of suspects who aren't white, that's a theme from a mostly white press corps. And I can't help but wonder if that's them trying to kind of seem or act like they're anti-racist, but it's resulted in them falling short of their journalistic responsibilities. And look, I would love to see race left out of the media more often. Not every single thing is about race. And I think the media injects it into conversations far too often. But when the media has this obsession with race in one regard, but completely ignores it in other instances, it's weird. It is divisive, because then you have people wondering why the media shapes the narrative in that way. And it needs to be called out. And I hope that people in the press can realize this, can check themselves, and can do better. Again, I'll let you know what King 5 says about scrubbing the reference to the Quran in this article and see what their justification was. And that's it for this episode of the Undivided Podcast on this April Fool's Day. I always try to convert you guys to paid subscribers so we can help to grow this mission. You can become a paid subscriber on Patreon, patreon.com/undivided, for as little as $5 a month. Or you can be a contributor on my locals community, brandycruz.locals.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. And thank you for showing an interest in giving common sense a comeback. And a big thanks to the founding sponsor of Undivided, 1530 Mortgage. Visit them at 1530mortgage.com.